Hello everyone and welcome back to the Wine and Uncorked Chronicles podcast. This is Sylvie, your host on the WNUC, that's the hashtag podcast. And today, get ready, get strapped in for a tale that takes you beyond the edge of adventure. This is probably the most heart-stopping escapade that I have ever had. My close-to-death experience from the heart of Kenya Malewa's Conservancy. Play the trailer. I don't care. I don't know how fast they are, but this thing was charging at us at speeds that are unfathomable when you're sitting in the boat and you're seeing this angry thing and all you can see in its eyes is murder. Bloody, bloody murder.
Are you ready now to be my princess, to be loved? All you need but plenty of anything you want, my girl. Anywhere you want, my love.
But before we dive headfirst into this story's climax, let's just rewind a little. So I'm just gonna set the feeling a bit, right? Set the tone a bit. So imagine this, picture this, the Kenyan hot sun blazing overhead. There's a group of wide-eyed kids and they're brimming with excitement. They're reminiscing about the past 2 days, camping out in the wilderness, surrounded by games, surrounded by sounds that are unfathomable unless you actually have visited the plains of you know, where wildlife exists. I hate to say Africa, but I'm going to say Africa. And two electrifying days, 10-year-old kids brimming around. This is a school trip. And of course, in those last 2 days, we cycled through the game reserve. There's the thrill of the wildlife encounters. Of course, these are still tingling through our memories from the past days. We're buzzing. And of course, that's what happens when you're a kid. You buzz full of energy, especially when you've done things that you don't normally do, right? So cycling through the game reserve, of course, the thrill of these wildlife encounters, scaling these like rugged cliffs during rock climbing adventures, the adrenaline match that was unmatched, of course, by these crazy, breathtaking reviews. And Malewa is situated in Gilgil. So for my Kenyans, I'm sure you know where Gilgil is. For the non-Kenyan listeners, well, you'll just have to go to Kenya to find out where Gilgil is. But back to it, those 2 days prior were the epitome of the perfect camping trip. Everything that a 10-year-old could ask for, right? Adventure. And then the last day, the climax of it all, woo, we're going to go on a boat. We're going to go on a boat adventure up the river, myself and 5 other people, and we're segmented into groups, and it's going to be great. People, that was just the beginning of the exciting. Let's take a short break. So we fast forward to the rubber boat expedition. So it's a hot, hot, hot day, super hot day. Myself and 4 other people volunteered to go first from the group, and we were accompanied by a guide. I will never forget the name of him because he saved our lives. Well, at least I think that he was responsible for holding the stuff together to the point that saved our lives. Patrick, a young Maasai man, I'm not sure if I saw him today that I would recognize him, but I'm pretty sure some part of my existence would. So we're going on this like upstream expedition on this rubber dinghy. Now, guys, a rubber dinghy is just a rubber boat that you would take on some nonchalant river adventure that, you know, is poses no threat whatsoever. There's nothing around you that can harm you. But as I'm setting the context, we are in a game reserve where there's game. So there was no predators, but there's game. And game can mean dangerous. So keep that in mind. So yeah, so of course it was myself and four other classmates at the time. And of course the laughter was echoing. We were having fun. We were excited to get into the boat and go upstream. But there was one person who was particularly kind of nervous and skeptical. And I remember leading up to the point where we got on the boat, he kept saying, "Oh, guys, I don't want to do this. I feel like something's going to happen. Something bad is going to happen." And we're like, "Shut up, man. What are you on about? Like, relax. What do you mean something's going to happen? Like, don't start like putting in bad, you know, vibes." And then, oh, the guy suddenly says, "Oh, no, we can't do the trip." You know how when you're young, you're just like, "Come on, man. Don't be one of them. So we get in the boat and it's, you know, it's this idyllic scene and it's beautiful, serene. We're going upstream. So, of course, the current is, there's a light current, but nothing that is strong enough to push us backwards. And it was an upstream adventure anyway. So, of course, there are all these sounds, the waters, there's a silence, but there's sounds with it. You know, this place is just casting this enchantment around us. And then suddenly, there's a bit of a low rumble, right? It kind of disrupts the quiet ambience. And suddenly, Charles gets a bit like irate. And he just starts being like, shouting like, "Oh my God, something bad is going to happen. Something bad is going to happen." And we're like, "Man, shut up." The guy tells him, "Charles, sit down, shut up. Shut up right now. Everybody keep quiet." So we're all pin drop silence. Pin drop silence. But you can tell the air has shifted and then it hits us. Something went into the water. And you can tell it's something that went into the water when it heard us. And that's when it all began. So of course there's panic. There's a feeling of panic, this tension, and it's just surging through our veins. And this impending danger that's just kind of materialized beneath us is now becoming a fucking reality. In the chaos of everything, things just started to slow down. And I think that when the cliche that like when things become threatening, they all happen in slow motion, I cannot make that up. So within, I would say, 2 minutes, this huge, 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 terrifying head of a hippo pops up about 30 meters ahead of us and it starts swimming aggressively towards our silly rubber boat. Our rubber boat against a one-ton animal that is angry for God knows what reason is heading towards us with 60 kilometers per hour. I don't care. I don't know how fast they are, but this thing was charging at us at speeds that are unfathomable when you're sitting in the boat and you're seeing this angry thing and all you can see in its eyes is murder, bloody, bloody murder. So of course we're terrified, we're screaming, and then the worst mistake that could happen. Patrick, our guide, grabbed onto one of the oars that we were using to row. The thing was circulating the boat, kind of just timing us, you know, as though it's prey, as though it's an animal, a prey. It's not prey. And then Patrick slams the oar on the thing's head. Its head just went underneath the water and disappeared. We'll take a short break, guys. Gather around, kids. I've got a story to tell you, a mystical, mystical tale. In the setting that is St. Paul, France, a hamlet of La Baume, nestled amidst rolling hills and veiled in the ethereal mist of vinous folklore, whispered, stirred over legendary libation, the La Baume Merlot, a wine of enigmatic origins. Its existence was shrouded in the uncertainty of bygone eras. The aroma, a subtle symphony of secrets unfurled like the clandestine gathering of botanical alchemies. And in this ancient vineyard, roses and berries conspired, weaving an elixir that beckoned intrepid souls into the labyrinth of the unknown. With the first sip, one embarked on an elusive pilgrimage through the vineyards lost to the sands of times. Plums and cherries like spectral apparitions of flavor pirouetted on a palate, leaving behind traces of a taste that defied the very logic of mortal comprehension. Its velvety texture, reminiscent of otherworldly silk, bestowed a spectral caress, haunting the senses as if guided by unseen hands. And the finish, an elusive wisp, lingered in the air like the fading notes of an ancient melody. Caught in the tendrils of ephemeral enchantment, it left behind a cryptic mark, a testament to a wine that seemed more illusion than reality. And as the tale wove its way through the lore of La Balme, an additional chapter unfolded, a peculiar footnote whispered among the vines. The taste of this mystical Merlot lingered on longer than the ephemeral threads of mortal relationships, a cryptic echo of entanglements lost to the annals of time. In conclusion, kids, this La Balme Merlot stood as a spectral enigma, a vineyard specter transcending the boundaries of existence. Whether a creation of mortal hands or an ethereal manifestation of the vineyard spirit, only those brave enough to venture into the mysteries of this elusive wine would catch a glimpse of the shadowy tapestry of this legend. Okay, guys, so the hippo has just gone underneath the water. And of course, at this point, there's silence because all we're hearing is like the little bubbling of the water that's left behind from the hippo going down. And we're like, where is this hippo gone? And I think there was maybe a 3-second period, what felt like 10 minutes. And then we were suddenly airborne. I just remember being in the sky, looking at everyone around us in the sky, hands flailing everywhere. So the hippo had basically gone underneath the boat and lifted us into the air, like capsized us. And everything happened in the slowest of motion that is genuinely possible. And I remember the moment that I hit the water and I thought, this might just be the day that I die. I'm 10 years old, guys. We were 10, between 10 and 12. Imagine. And then underwater, this river, it became like, of course, you're submerged in this water that is murky. You can't see anything. There's dirt flowing. The current is taking you down. And all I could think at that time was get to the surface because there's a hippo. There's a bloody hippo, guys. I cannot make this up. There's a hippo in the water and I'm in that same water with it less than 20 meters away. And this thing might possibly end my life and eat me or kill me. It doesn't eat people, it kills people. Did you know, by the way, side chat, hippos are the number one responsible things responsible for deaths in Africa. I think malaria is number one killer, but like when I say animals, okay, hippos are the number one killers of people in Africa. So imagine being in that situation, panic just everywhere. You're in the water, and I remember coming out of that water, and I just remember telling myself, swim. Swim. You swim like your life depends on it. And that's what I did. We had our life jackets, right? So as I said, it was myself and 4 other people. We were all, so it was myself, another girl, she was in my class, person who predicted this would happen, Charles, I said your name, another person who was in the class below us, and Patrick. And he wasn't the best swimmer, but when I tell you, That guy swam to the riverbanks like Michael Phelps. I've never seen anyone move so fast in the water. To this day, I don't understand how such a weak swimmer could have swam that fast. But guys, I think that when you're in danger, your body does amazing things. When adrenaline kicks in, the flight or fight, that flight, we flew across those waters. We flew, my friends. We flew like Flash Gordon had come and appeared and had cemented into our bloodstreams. We flew and we all swam to the river banks. And they were steep, guys. They were really steep. They were, I'm not trying to exaggerate how, I'm trying to remember. Mind you, this was 20 years ago. Guys, yeah, I'm not young, you know, not as young as you might think or as young as I look, but they were steep, guys. So there was like the roots from the trees, right, that are kind of in the riverbanks. And so we were holding onto this. We climbed onto the riverbank. And I remember for a very brief moment, I turned back. I looked down. Because we had climbed up quite far. I think when you're in these situations that are threatening, things happen so quickly. And I remember there was blood dripping down my fingers because we'd gotten cut from holding on to the vines and, of course, the little, like, thistles there. And I look back and the hippo is chewing away at this pathetic rubber boat, chewing at it, gnawing on it with all its vengeance. Like we had done something to harm it. And you know what the reality is, my friends? We were in its territory. This was a mother defending her cubs. She did nothing wrong. We did. We were in her territory. So anyway, back onto the riverbanks. We're holding on to dear life. And then I remember at some point, because we're shaking, we were crying, we were shouting for help, we were screaming our asses off, just hoping that God would just, I don't know. I remember repenting for all the sins, 10-year-old repenting for her sins. So I was like, if I'm going to the kingdom of heaven today, please, I am sorry for all that I did. Guys, I can laugh about this now, but yeah. It's a crazy story. So we are all holding on to these vines, for dear life. Everything unfolding in slow motion. And I remember at some point, my hands were covered in blood. And for 1 second, I just let go. And I remember tumbling backwards. I fell backwards. And then the guide, he caught me. He caught my hand. And he was holding on to me. This strong man held on to me and he lifted me back up because I was heading back down into that water, my friends. My friends, when I tell you that I nearly died, I cannot make this up. And I have people to corroborate my story. Maybe one day I'll have them on this podcast too and we'll discuss this. So yeah, so now he brings me back up and he tells us, okay, guys, this is the game plan. We're gonna climb up these riverbanks and we're gonna go up to the top, right? Where the land meets the river, I guess. And we're going to then walk a kilometer downstream to go and meet the rest of the group who are doing different activities near the waterfall. But you know what's crazy is that the sound of the hippo gnawing at the boat, it still echoes in my ears somehow. You know, it's like every heartbeat felt like a countdown. And, you know, I always think back to Charles, who was a fellow classmate here, who had basically been predicting this scenario all along. He kept saying, we're going to be attacked by this hippo. We're going to be attacked by this hippo. And Charles, in the midst of panic, in the midst of crying, his predictions unfolded before all of our eyes. And this vivid memory of Charles, it would turn into this haunting reality. So barefoot, wet, we pulled ourselves together. We got to the top, looking like the living dead. We walked a kilometer, cuts on our fingers. And guys, I thank the universe every single day that all we left was with cuts on our fingers. No one died. No one got killed. And we got to the point where the other group was. And they looked at us and they were like, guys, we had some screams. Was that you? Is that why you guys were wet? You were having the time of your lives? Having the time of your lives? And we were standing there in absolute shock, not knowing what to believe. And we told them, guys, we just got attacked by a hippo. And I remember the look on everyone's face. Their faces dropped. They all went pale. Their eyes became huge. Pupils dilated. The disbelief in their eyes as they looked at us like the walking dead. The incredulous feeling of fear. The fact that we survived and we were standing there telling them this story is unfathomable, really. Unless you have survived something that brings you as close to the helm of death as being attacked by a wild animal and surviving it being barely scratched. I don't know what to think of that. Was it luck or was it like some heavenly power protecting us? And so here we are at the end of this horrifying ordeal, beneath the heat, beneath the terror, beneath the memory of surviving something like this, this dance with danger, this ripple of terror that, of course, remains in our minds, remains in my mind to this day. Yeah, that's a story I just had to uncork with you guys. I just had to tell you. This is something that I genuinely felt was worth sharing. And I think that from what I remember, they stopped doing these boat tours after that event. Nearly lost our lives, guys, 10 years old. But we're here today. We're here today to tell the story. Okay, people, that's it for today's episode. You are here joined by me, your host on the Wine and Uncorked Chronicles podcast. Remember always that nature has its own rhythm, it has its own tale, and sometimes it's just a beat that can make your heart skip or even end it. Until next time, stay curious, stay adventurous, sip on that wine. Love and light, guys. Have a good one. See you next episode. If you've enjoyed the journey, don't forget to raise your glass, leave a like, share your thoughts, let me know your favorite moment. Until next time, continue savoring the richness of life's mysteries. This is Sylvie signing off from Wine and Uncorked Chronicles. See you on the next episode.